You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends. Nightmare on Film Street returns March 5th for a brand new season of the show. But in the lead up, we've got a couple fun episodes for you. This week, we're bringing you an interview that I did with the senior programmer, Peter Hall, who is responsible for bringing all the cool movies to South by Southwest. We're talking about the Midnight program this year and the other genre films that he helped program, including, you know, all the horror movies that you're looking forward to this year. We talk a little bit about Ready or Not 2, about They Will Kill You, Hokum. We even talk about, you know, silly, crazy movies like I Love Boosters. If you guys like Boots Riley, you're going to love hearing a couple little extra details about what this movie's about. This is a great little preview of everything that you can expect at South by Southwest this year. The festival kicks off March 12th, and this year's program is loaded with some kick-ass movies. Yeah, movies that are on our watch list already, like Hokum. God, I can't wait to see Hokum. And it sounds so fucking good. But yeah, we talked to Peter about what it's like programming a monster of a festival like South by Southwest. He watched something like 600 movies in the lead up to putting together this program, which is just mind boggling. But if you're planning on attending the festival this year, or you just want to get a quick little hint at the movies that should be on your radar for the rest of 2026, stick around and listen to my interview with Peter Hall. Well, Peter, thank you so much for joining me today. Really excited to talk to you about the program that you've put together for South by Southwest.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate the support.
Maybe you want to just tell everybody what it is that you do for the festival?
Yeah, so my name is Peter Hall. I'm the senior programmer for South by Southwest on features in TV. So I program across all features, but then within that, I'm very specifically sort of a genre guy. So I also programmed the Midnighters section, which is 8 films. But one of the sort of fun and unique things about South by is we play genre stuff in every section. So it could, our headliners in particular this year, those are sort of the big studio films. There's a good number of genre projects in there. So we don't confine it just to one section, but I sort of happened into a scenario where the Midnighters are a bit of my, like, you know, sort of babies to some extent.
Right on. Yeah, like I would say that the average person listening to the podcast, like just the average horror fan looking across the catalog, might be surprised that the big horror pictures aren't really in the Midnight's program, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We're looking that way. And South by, I mean, it's interesting because it has I feel like, as someone who even just attended for years before working here full time, it's sort of like it has the reputation for being a launching pad for a lot of like indie stuff. The sort of mumblecore movement is associated with South by in some ways. But it actually has a really strong history of launching huge genre projects. Cabin in the Woods, The Evil Dead remake. And then in recent years, movies like Oddity. Last year, Good Boy premiered at South by. So, I mean, we are very steeped in genre, and it's not just me bringing that love. It has a long history there.
So you've been going to the festival for a long time. So my guess is that you're not one of the people from Austin that's just so annoyed with South by Southwest every year, because it takes over like the whole city, right?
It does. It is a gigantic festival. It's one of the largest film festivals in both the U.S. and in the world. It screens in a number of venues, but you could do the festival just from like the Alamo Drafthouse South Lamar, which is where most of the Midnighters premiere. Like, you could do it there and never go downtown and still have an incredible festival. So it is spread out all over the place. But yeah, I started here in 2009, I think, going into the 2010 festival, where I volunteered as a screener, which means someone who watched submissions and gave the programming team feedback. And I kind of just kept sticking around, and they kept inviting me back. Became an associate programmer around 10 years ago or so. And then in 2022, Janet Pearson, who was the former head of the festival, stepping down, and Claudette Godfrey, who's the new head of the festival, was stepping up. And that's when I got brought in full time as a programmer. And I've been here ever since.
That's awesome. What was your first year like? What were some of the highlights, that like movies that you specifically programmed that year?
The first year that I was on staff, well, that's a good question. They all blur together in a way because so part of my job is watching the submissions, and South By programs exclusively from submissions. We don't necessarily go to like other festivals to scout and stuff like that. So people who have an idea of what South By is are submitting their work to us. And so I alone this past year watched over 650 feature submissions, which is a bit of a mind melter. And so even when I love a film, I get particularly bad with titles. Titles start to like, titles and years all blur together in my head. So I'm trying to remember, I think the first year that I was on staff would have been Deadstream, I think, was one of the ones that year. I love Deadstream. Hypochondriac, I think, was also that year.
I can see you Googling it.
But I've watched so many feature films for South By in the past, just even since being full time. It's more than most people do in their entire life.
Yeah, that's insane. Like, yeah, I was gonna say 650. That's definitely more than I watched in an entire year. But yeah, I think for a lot of people, it's probably more than they watch in their whole life. That's nuts. How do you? Yeah. So this is a problem that I encounter every film festival. Sounds like you just encounter it every day. How do you avoid the burnout? Or like, do you have any tricks for sort of getting yourself out of the burnout? Because I find if I watch 11 movies in a day, sometimes it's like I don't really care about movie 8. And years later, I'll rewatch it. Like, oh, wow, what was I thinking? This movie was great, but I just didn't have the bandwidth for it at the time.
I move around where I'm watching stuff. So I don't always watch under the exact same circumstances, which I think probably gives any filmmakers listening, you know, a bit of sense of unease that we're not, you know, watching every single submission on an IMAX screen or whatever. I will watch on my desktop computer. I will watch downstairs on my, you know, very elaborate home theater setup with an Atmos setup and a projector screen if I want to mess around with it. I actually watch a lot of submissions while doing workouts on my elliptical. And so I remember specifically watching Oddity the year that it was programmed, which would have been 2023, going into 2024 is when we played it. And my wife came home and opened the garage door and came inside which like reset the timer for the lights. And so it plunged me into darkness after like 5 minutes. And I found myself getting genuinely scared watching Oddity while doing a workout on this like weird little setup, which I've since improved, but like with the monitor rigged on top of the monitor for the elliptical machine. On paper, it's the least ideal way to watch a movie. But when you're watching in the sheer volume that we are, you can focus in on, I could watch something on, you know, 6-inch iPhone screen or a 60-inch theater screen and still have the sort of same radar for whether or not it's working.
Wow. That's crazy. So like, I might try and take that. I might try and take some of that advice. It's hard when you're at a film festival because you're often just watching it under their conditions.
And I also, for the sheer volume of what we're watching, I don't do research about the films ahead of time. I just export sort of a list of titles and links. And so I go in watching everything cold. I feel like if you were just to program your own little like movie marathon at home or something like that, you do try to give it a certain flow. You're choosing what type of films you want to watch or what might build into the next. It's like programming a little mini film festival in your living room. But for submissions, it's cold. So everything, what I could press play on a horror movie, and then the next thing I press play on is a 3-hour nature documentary. Like it could be anything. And so I actually think the fact that whatever I click play on next could be something completely random helps it keep feeling fresh. And I don't have expectations of, okay, now like I'm in the mood for this kind of movie, so I'm going to track that down and watch it. It's just, you got to get through the numbers. And so it's whatever's next.
I love that. I was actually going to ask, like, hey, so, you know, for any aspiring filmmakers out there, like, how do they put together a good submission? But it sounds like just get it in there. Like, it doesn't, you don't even necessarily have to give a write-up on it. Just submit it and somebody will watch it, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's very true for us. Not to plug another film fest or another podcast, but the South By team, we recently did a podcast with No Film School talking about the South By submission process and sort of demystifying it. And I'm not going to speak for how other festivals program, but we really do just go off of the submission. We go off of the film. So you don't have to stress spending 2 weeks writing some perfectly calibrated director's statement or anything like that. Just get the film in as good a shape as you can by the deadlines and let the film speak for itself. And we have genuine FOMO, genuine fear of missing out. So the programmers, like myself, are watching way more than is safe for the human body because we don't want to miss that one thing. So, yeah, it's just a lot of watching.
That's so cool. Yeah, like I've got some friends that do programming at other film festivals as well, and it seems like they do the exact same thing, and it's grueling. It's like you're just watching movies nonstop all day. But glad to hear that you guys, like such a big festival, are still kind of treating it that way. That's awesome.
Yeah, and every film fills out the same application, whether they are the biggest studio film on the planet or a tiny independent film that's not on anyone's radar, like Good Boy. They are all still filling out the same paperwork and coming in the same way.
That's killer. Yeah, so like I definitely want to go over some of the features that you've programmed for The Midnighter, but for anybody who hasn't been to South by Southwest before or has just sort of like heard about it a lot and never visited, like what makes South by Southwest different from every other film festival? Why should somebody who's never been to Austin make this the year they come out?
South by is a gigantic festival. It's several festivals happening at the same time. So there's the Film and TV Festival, there's a music festival, and what is now called the Innovation Festival, which a lot of people associate with just like the tech conference is kind of what it used to be. And there's also a comedy festival. So all of those things overlap at the same time, which is creates an overwhelming amount of people and options to choose from. But the cool thing is, unlike a festival that is only the film screenings, there are other things that you can do. So like if you are wanting to spend half your day seeing new films before anybody else, like discovering what's on the radar. If you're kind of one of those people that likes to be the person to recommend movies to your friends because you see them first, it's great for that discovery. So you could spend half the day doing that, and you could spend, let's say you're interested in learning how to make films, you could spend the other half of the day going to the conference and going to panels about film financing or editing workflows, or you get to go have a mentorship with we do a mentorship program where people can sign up to meet and talk to agents and managers and things like that. So there, you can approach it from so many different ways. There are people that come to South By and all they do is watch 4 to 5 movies a day. There are people who come and they see one big movie at night and then they go to conference stuff all day. So it's really flexible. You get out of it what you put into it. Now, I asked for why you should come in 2026. One of the big changes this year from past years is there's a much more elaborate reservation system now. So that's another thing that sort of distinguishes South By from other festivals is it's a badged event. So you're not buying individual tickets to things ahead of time. So if you get a film and TV badge, that badge gets you access to all of the film and TV events, whether those are things in the conference, speakers and sessions and whatnot, are the film screenings. If you get a platinum badge, it gets you access to all of the film stuff, all of the music stuff, all of the innovation stuff, all of the conference stuff. So you can sort of max out what you're doing, but the badge, the flexibility that you have there to just change your mind and see a friend, and the friend is like, oh, I'm going to go see I Love Boosters. And you can be like, oh, I'll go see that and go get in line. But now there's a reservation system, which starting on February 19th, if you have a platinum badge, and then it's February 26th, if you have a film and TV badge, you can start reserving tickets ahead of time. So we actually have the ability this year to map out your schedule and know what you're getting into more ahead of time. Then in years past, it was a bit of a like, yeah, I'll go stand in that line and see what happens kind of thing. Now with the new reservation system, there should take out some more of that uncertainty if you're the kind of person that wants to plan. If you do want to play it hour by hour and decide what you're going to, you can still do that.
That's crazy. Yeah, it sounds a lot more like an amusement park for film nerds this year.
it is pretty wild. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, I'm sure this is something that you noticed, like, when you first started going to film festivals, too. Like, for anybody who's listening to this, like, I really encourage you to go to any film festival. Like, obviously, South by Southwest is great. But, like, even your, like, local small film festivals. Because, like, the thing that I love most about film fests is just hanging out in the lobby and talking to people, like, either before a movie or afterward. Like, it's the one time now where it feels like, I don't know, like what seeing movies back in the late 90s used to feel like. Like everything now, like we all watch stuff online. We all watch stuff at home by ourselves. Like we can hop on Letterboxd. Like Letterboxd is a great community for film discovery and chatting with people. But just like the communal aspect of just discussing or, you know, talking about your favorite parts of a movie afterward is, you only find that at film festivals now.
Yeah, I am a huge evangelist for film festivals for so many reasons. A, I work at one, so it's great for me to talk about the sense of discovery for filmmakers that you can do. But what you're saying of being in the same place and seeing the same people over and over, I am also a filmmaker. Last year, my creative partner and I, Paul, our first movie that we directed called Man Finds Tape came out. And that is a movie that was born directly of the film festival world. I had gotten to know a producer named Dave Lawson, who makes Justin and Benson, Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead's films. I met him through the film festival world, through South By, seeing him in passing at events. And so when Paul and I were putting our film together, I reached out to him to say, like, hey, we'd love to pick your brain about some production logistics, because Something in the Dirt and Man Finds Tape have a few little like logistical overlap. And he agreed to read it, and then he ended up producing it, and Benson Moorhead are producers on it, and all of that happened because of random encounters at film festivals. So I highly recommend film festivals to anyone who's interested in the world of film, whether that's just watching and discovering stuff or even making films.
That's rad. Yeah, like, and yeah, anybody out there who likes found footage movies, you should definitely check out Man Finds Tape. My co-host here, like Kim, she directed a short film a few years ago that, like, half of, like, I'd say everybody on the post-production team was just somebody that we met at a film festival, like whether it was like Overlook or South By or Fantastic Fest. It's just like connections that we made at film festivals and just friends that we were kind of able to call on to help us get something to the finish line. Like, and it's not like you go to film festivals thinking like, oh, I'm going to make connections. It's just like, you're just hanging out, making friends, talking about movies. It's pretty great. It's like summer camp for film nerds.
Exactly.
So let's get into the feature programs. Let's talk about some of the stuff that you programmed this year. I don't know if you necessarily have anywhere that you want to start, but you could take us through it.
I mean, we can start with The Midnighters. I mean, this is the most genre concentrated. Yeah. So I would assume it would appeal to this audience the most.
Yeah. When I said features, I meant Midnighters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but we have like, I mean, so Ready or Not 2 is in our section. That is unequivocally a genre film. So I'll get to the headliners in a minute. But for The Midnighters, there's, I'll just go in alphabetical order. We have American Dollhouse, which is written and directed by a guy named John Valley, who's an Austin-based filmmaker. It was made in Austin, and this is a pretty gnarly film about a young woman who sort of moves back into her mother's house and has this encounter with an increasingly unhinged neighbor. It's really stylish. It's got great performances. There is one kill in particular in this movie that everyone on staff would constantly talk about. I don't want to say what it is in terms of to like, you know, skew expectations, but it's just a really creative, fun moment. So I highly recommend that. And similarly, we have Drag, which this was actually produced by Danny DeVito and his children.
That's so cool.
One of whom is in the movie, Lucy DeVito, she's in it. And this is a fun movie about two women who break into a house to steal something, almost sort of like as revenge on this guy. And as they're sort of robbing the house, Lizzie Kaplan's character throws out her back and can't like walk out of the house. So she has to get dragged out of the house.
Oh, great. Okay.
And so, something happens when she gets dragged out of the house that sets off the plot in some very unexpected ways. And it's really, it's a delight. So it's very funny. It's got a great sense of humor. It's pretty dark. And there is one moment in particular that, again, the theater, especially if you've been to South by before, you know how enthusiastic the crowds are. If you haven't, it is going to be a very over-the-top reaction to this moment.
So maybe this is a good spot to pause. Like, when you're thinking about Midnighters, because I find every film festival approaches Midnighters differently. Like, do you, not that every film's going to have it, but like, do you prefer that your Midnighters have like one huge, splashy, incredibly insane moment?
Not necessarily. And we'll get to some that I think are not on the splashy side, but still fit into the Midnighter mold. It's just, we always sort of notice these trends afterwards. We don't go into it intentionally. And since we can play genre films in any section, there are films here that could definitely be in the vision section or narrative spotlight or are shuffled around in that way. One of the sort of trends that did emerge after the fact, as we were much deeper into the programming process, was there were a lot of films this year that had really good senses of humor. Mm. And I don't know if it's just given the dark, dark times that we're living in, that everyone is hoping to have a bit of a bright spot or a laugh or something. But we really sparked to films that figured out ways to process the awful world around us through dark senses of humor. And I think that definitely applies to American Dollhouse and Drag, and then a couple more that are in the Midnighters list. 15, which is this Mexican-Argentinian film about two girls who are just trying to survive turning 15, and one of them sort of partakes, or I guess both of them, in this ritual that causes a lot of chaos in their small town. The chaos gets very violent very quickly. I think people are, this one is it's sort of like, oh, people aren't going to see this one coming. It's a lot of fun. It has a lot of good practical gags in it. I really like that. And then we'll get to the scary stuff in a minute. Weirdly, this actually just works out alphabetically that the sort of fun ones are up top. But next we have Grind, which is an anthology directed by Bria Grant, Ed Doherty, and Chelsea Stardust. And it is a, I'm a big fan of anthologies. I like just sort of like that showcase of different tales that intersect with one another. And this is one of those. Each one is on a somewhat comedic bent, where it's people in various stages of hustle culture trying to survive, and they get wrapped up in crazy weird stories.
Yeah, I can see Barbara Crampton and Rob Hubel here. This one looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun, and it's got some really standout segments in it, so I really recommend that.
And it seems like, this is where we have like a cutoff line where it starts to get scary, right? If we're going alphabetically. So
if we're going alphabetical, then the next one up is Hokum, and Hokum is from Damien McCarthy, director of Oddity. It is just a straight-up scary movie. It is really good. This movie, it feels like something that Stephen King never wrote. The story is, it's about Adam Scott, who goes to this remote like hotel to spread his parents' ashes, and then gets caught up in this larger story going on there. And I mean, if you liked Oddity, you're gonna love this. If you didn't like Oddity, you're still gonna love this. It's really, really clever.
Yeah, this is the one that I'm probably most looking forward to. Oddity was one of my absolute favorites. And I just love how Damien McCarthy like builds scares. Even was a Caveat, his the movie he had done before that. Mm-hmm. Just really brilliant stuff.
Yeah,
very and jealous you got to see it at home on an elliptical or something. I don't know where you watched this one.
I did watch it. I watched this one in my bedroom. And it is it's really good.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. February can make it feel like everyone else has their love life completely sorted. Married, dating, coupled up, and glowing in that soft diner lighting. But the truth is, no matter where you're at, partnered, single, or focusing on yourself, most of us are still figuring things out as we go. Therapy can be a really useful space for that. It's a place to talk through what you actually want, what feels heavier than it should, and how to take some of that pressure off, whether you're working on a relationship, navigating dating, or just checking in with yourself. BetterHelp makes it easier to get started by matching you with a licensed therapist based on your needs and preferences. And if your first match isn't quite right, you can switch anytime so you can stay focused on what you're working through. If you want a little more clarity and a little less second-guessing, therapy can help you find your way. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
And then next up we have Imposters. Imposters is, of the Midnighters, this is the one that is closer to a sort of sci-fi-ish bend to it. It's about two new parents who lose their baby, and not in a like, oh, grief is the real monster way. Like, they literally lose the baby and are convinced that something took it, and go to great lengths to get it back. Or get him back, it's a boy. And it's a really, really clever premise. It's got really great visuals in it. It stars Jessica Roth from the Happy Death Day films and Charlie Barnett. So it's got a strong cast, and I'm really looking forward to people discovering that. Then next up we have Monitor. This is the directorial debut of two filmmakers, Matt Black and Ryan Polley. Cool. And this one is another just kind of going straight for the scares kind of movie. It's about a social media moderator approving videos for, you know, YouTube, Facebook type platform. And she decides to not publish this very strange video that comes up in her feed, and then starts getting haunted by the entity that sort of produced it, that wants the video out into the wild. and so it's really clever. It's got good performances and some really creative jump scares in it. So I really recommend that.
Right on.
And then the last one in the Midnighters, this sort of shows the spectrum of stuff that we cover. It's called Never After Dark. It's much more on the J-horror side of things. If you're the kind of person who likes horror movies with elaborate rituals in them, this will scratch that itch in a big way. It's about a psychic who sort of travels the countryside performing exorcisms to sort of, you know, cleanse spaces and whatnot. And she comes across a haunting in this really great location, this great house in the woods. I think it's a hotel in the woods. And I don't want to give away the mechanics of how the ritual works or what is going on there, but it's very smart and it's very original. And it's got some really great scares in it as well. So Never After Dark rounds out the Midnighters.
That's a rad program, dude. Like, I'm sure when you're at the festival, like, you've got other stuff to do and you're probably hosting filmmakers a lot. Do you get a chance to sit in the theater and watch much of these with the audience?
I don't. That's actually one of the big sort of bummers of my job. So many of the films that when they're submitted to us, they're not finished. They're missing sound effects, they're missing visual effects, color. So I actually don't catch the finished versions of these until years later. I do like to, particularly if we're doing the Q&As, if the timing works out, sometimes I'm like rushing in right when the credits hit, but I usually try to time it out where I sort of stand at the side of the theater or the back of the theater and watch the last like 10 minutes with the crowd. And particularly for genre films, those last 10 minutes often have some of the biggest moments packed into them. So that can be a lot of fun. I remember the year that we premiered Immaculate, standing at the back of the Paramount as Sydney Sweeney is raising the rock, and the theater just lost it. And you can it's particularly the Paramount, you can feel it like a visceral like wave of reaction. Every now and then I do carve out time where I can see something with a crowd. I made sure to see the premiere, the world premiere of Evil Dead Rise with a crowd. I had already seen it when it was submitted, but sitting in that crowd, I have never been in a theater with a reaction quite like that. It was like you were at like a rock concert, but in the most like respectful way. Like, people were losing their minds. It got like a standing ovation when the title card hit. It was really, really cool. And that's one of the things that I really like about South by audiences is that sometimes you go to other festivals and the audience feels a bit more like arms crossed, okay, movie, you got to impress me. Mm. Whereas I feel like our South by audiences are much more arms open, like, okay, movie, what do you got? I want to support you if I'm with you, kind of thing. And so I think we have very enthusiastic, receptive audiences, and there's no screening quite like a South by screening.
Yeah, I'd say like the best festival experiences I've ever had have felt like I'm watching wrestling. Like the audience is going, like maybe not everybody's like yelling at the screen or anything, but yeah, like everybody is ready to cheer, ready to hoot and holler.
It's sort of like the opening of Scream 2. Always yes. Drives me crazy that like they're all going, the audience for like the screening of Stab is the most disrespectful, shitty audience ever. But the energy that they're bringing, like if you can imagine a more respectful version yes. of that, that's what I love out of film festivals.
Absolutely. Yeah. The best case version of Scream, of the opening of Scream 2 is what you're hoping for and what often you get at film festivals. Yeah. Because these are all people that love yeah. movies as much as you do. So if you could pick one movie out of just the Midnighters, at least, to see in the theater, like if you could, like the way that you watched Evil Dead Rise, which one would you go to?
Oh man, that's a really good question. I mean, Hokum is going to be a special one to be in the room for, the same way that Oddity was. If I had to just pin it down to one visceral moment, though, it might be Drag.
Okay.
because Drag has the sort of like inciting incident that kicks it off is really squirm inducing, and I can't wait to see an audience discover it.
That's great. So what are some of the other movies? Because I know you guys are playing Buddy, and like I covered Sundance, but we only did the online version, so we didn't get a chance to see Buddy. So very jealous that you guys are also playing it. But well, yeah. I guess one thing, tell me about Buddy, please. And then also like let's talk about some of the other crazy movies you guys have in the program.
Buddy's great. It was in Midnight at Sundance. We're also playing Leviticus, which was in Midnight at Sundance. Buddy is such a, it's a very, I'm not surprised in the slightest that Sundance played it, but it's also a very South by kind of film. It is a, it has, if you're familiar with Casper Kelly's like Adult Swim work, it is very up that alley, but in a sort of evolved feature way. It's got great visuals. It gets increasingly surreal. Some good gore gags with children are always fun in horror. So it's a really clever way of doing the story, which is about this sort of not necessarily haunted children's show, but a family who's gets wrapped up in a experience with the show, I guess is all I would say about it. And Buddy is the sort of Barney type character on it who has full control over his imaginary world.
Yeah, for anybody listening, Casper Kelly directed the Fun Size segment in VHS Halloween just last year. So if you like that madcap energy, it seems like it's 90 minutes of that. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's great. And then on the headliner side, we already talked about Ready or Not 2. That is a complete blast. If you liked the first film, you are definitely going to want to check this one out.
Well, you guys are playing They Will Kill You as well, correct? Sorry to cut you off.
That's what I was going to mention next is okay, They Will good. Kill You is from an alumni filmmaker, Kirill Sokolov. And it's funny, when they dropped the trailer for this, I was reading the YouTube comments, and the YouTube comments were like, oh, the trailer gives everything away. Like, it just looks like Ready or Not in a hotel. And that's kind of what the trailer looks like. That's not what the movie is. The trailer has held back a very large element of what makes this movie awesome.
Oh,
so
great.
This is one... outside of the Midnighters section, if we're just talking genre films and reactions in the room, this one is going to crush at the Paramount.
Oh,
because once people see the trick that it has up its sleeve, it like when they discover it in real time, I hope they don't give it away before the film. I hope they keep the trailers the way they've kept them.
Yeah, once you're sold on a trailer, stop watching the additional trailers. Like, they're not for you. Yep. You know, like if you're already planning on buying a ticket, don't go looking for spoilers.
Yeah. But that one's great. We also have, this isn't a horror movie, but I would flag for people, a movie called Pretty Lethal, directed by Vicky Jewson, that is from the producers of John Wick and The Fall Guy. And it is a movie about a troupe of ballerinas who end up in this sort of like European mansion run by criminals. and they have to fight their way out of it. And so it has the stunt level that you would expect with a John Wick, the sort of action choreography. But the young women in it are not John Wick. They are young women who are struggling to survive in this house and are constantly getting the snot beat out of them as they're trying to get out. So they don't have John Wick skills, but they do, you know, tape knives to their feet and use their ballerina skills.
Oh, shit.
And so I think the first time they, I don't know the terms of their dance moves, but the first time one of them does, you know, like a pilet or whatever, a pirouette or something, and someone's throat gets slit, the audience is going to lose their mind.
That's great.
So that one's a lot of fun. And then on the more sci-fi side, we have this really great movie called Mike and Nick and Nick and Alice from director Ben David Grabinski that is it's a time travel movie. And it stars James Marsden, Vince Vaughn, and Aza Gonzalez. And they get wrapped up in this story where one of those three characters, I guess I won't say which because I don't think they've said which, ends up traveling through time. And it kicks off this like really sort of great action shoot 'em up story. And it's a lot of fun. I really, really like this movie. It's the kind of studio comedy that this high concept that I think people complain about, like, oh, we don't get those movies anymore. This feels like one of those kinds of movies.
That's awesome.
And then the last headliner that I would call out on the strictly genre front is Over Your Dead Body, directed by Yorma Taconi. That is a remake of the I believe it's Norwegian or Finnish film The Trip, and it stars Samara Weaving and Jason Segel. It's our second Samara Weaving movie, and it's also the stunt team of 87 North that did Pretty Lethal also did this movie and produced it. So it has, like, when the violence hits, it hits in a very satisfying, over the top way. It's about a husband and wife who both go on this trip to a secluded house and are secretly trying to kill each other, but then their plans to kill each other get interrupted by another group of people that arrive at the house, and so it turns into like this sort of chaotic who's trying to kill who action horror comedy.
That's amazing. The original, it was directed by Tommy Wirkola, right, who did the Violent Night and the Red Dead movies. Or the Dead versus Red versus Dead, there we go.
Red versus Dead, and he's a producer on this one as well, I believe.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I still have not crossed the Trip off my watch list, but like I've been wanting to. I've heard nothing but good things about it. And yeah, always nice to see Samara Weaving just kicking the shit out of people. So go wrong.
She's great.
So tell me, out of curiosity, because I've got you here. I love boosters. Mm-hmm. What can you tell me about that? Because I find that trying to explain, Boots Riley's the director, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Trying to explain his other stuff to people is so hard because you have like the nugget of what it's about, but that's not really what it's about. Like, I know that Boosters is basically about credit card fraudsters, right? But it's obviously about a million other things.
Kind of. It's in the similar boat where it's, even if you start to explain it, it's about so much more than what you're going to say. But I Love Boosters is about a group of young women who boost high-end fashion clothes because they want to sort of like democratize it and sell them, you know, at much more reasonable prices to the community around them. So on paper, it's a movie about some people who are stealing from the rich. It's sort of like a fashion Robin Hood story. Okay. But it's not even remotely close to what the actual like genres involved in. There is a much larger sci-fi aspect to it.
Sweet.
It is a visual feast. It takes place in this sort of like not quite real world where, you know, like there's Demi Moore, who's sort of the villain of it. She's the one who runs the high-end fashion company. Like, her office building is like built on a slant because in this world, like, skyscrapers are just, you know, I guess in disrepair and are falling over. And it's one of those casual details that no one talks about. Like, it's just people are walking sideways through rooms and stuff like that. There is, I don't want to give away too much.
Yeah, no, of course. And I don't want
surprising.
You to,
There's a surprising genre element to it. There's like stop motion in it. That's really cool. There's a lot of going on in it. It's going to play huge.
I'm so excited. Yeah, if you don't immediately recognize Boots Riley's name, he also directed Sorry to Bother You and I'm a Virgo, I think was the Amazon Prime show. Just absolute insanity. Like you never know what to expect, and when you think you've got an idea what's going on, it takes a completely left turn. So I'm glad to hear that this is exactly what I'm expecting.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Amazing. Yeah, so outside of the Midnight stuff, if you had to pick, it's basically the same question, like outside of the Midnight stuff, if you got to go see one movie in the theater with an audience, what are you watching?
I'm gonna pull out two that are very different. One in the vision section, that is this movie from the UK called The Peril at Pincer Point, which is this really creative comedy about a sound recordist who's tasked from a director to go to this island to re-record like the perfect scream. He has to go find the woman who was captured on this tape with this perfect scream, and he becomes obsessed with recording it. And it's really funny. It's got a really surreal visual tone to it. The story goes places you don't expect. So I really, really like The Peril at Pincer Point. And then on a nonfiction side, but of interest to genre people, I would call out the documentary Serling, which is all about Twilight Zone creator Rod Serling.
Oh, cool.
And it's made almost entirely of just archival footage of interviews of him talking on talk shows back in the day. He also had a really extensive private audio collection that they use. And you don't have to be a Twilight Zone historian to appreciate this whatsoever. It's a really smart look at a guy who used his position to champion a lot of topics and issues that nobody else was talking about. And he really talks about the necessity of art as social protest. And it really, it's the kind of thing that you're watching it now, and even though all of the commentary that he's saying is from 60 plus years ago, it feels like he's talking about today. And it's really, really, really good.
That's sick. Yeah. So, I mean, like anybody who wants to find more info about South by Southwest, you pretty much know where to find it. You could just Google it. I mean, you probably already know, but you can go to sxsw.com. Are you on Letterboxd? Like, can people follow you on Letterboxd?
I am not really on Letterboxd, just because I would have to be logging so many films that I could not be talking about.
I was hoping you'd be able to tell me exactly how many movies you watched last year, because I'm very curious.
Yeah, I don't even have like a fake account. Like, I think I created one when Man Finds Tape was coming out, so I could like look at people's reviews. But even that, I quickly sort of gave up on that. but social media wise, I am Peter Hall Human on Instagram and Blue Sky. Those are kind of the only two that I use.
Sick. And where can people find Man Finds Tape?
Man Finds Tape is on VOD platforms of your choice. So Amazon, Google, Apple, all of those as of right now. It actually comes out on Blu-ray on the 24th. And then we'll figure out where it goes from there.
Sick. Congrats, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me and giving us a little bit of a preview here for South by Southwest. A lot of incredible movies. Like, looking through the lineup for South by Southwest every year is real hard, because you're like, wow, every single one of these, I don't know, 250 movies sounds awesome. You guys do an incredible job programming, and clearly you're the person to thank for at least a lot of the genre stuff.
Well, thank you. Yeah, if you can come to South by, it is a blast, and you will not regret it. If you can't come, just look at our lineup. Look, pay attention to those movies and put every single one of them on your watch list, because we put a lot of man hours into figuring out what we think is the sort of the best for our audience. So if you think you're going to like those films, just put them on your watch list, because you probably will.
Well, thank you again, man. I hope you have, I hope you find some time to relax during South by Southwest this year. I'm sure that's going to be tough. I'm sure you're going to have a good time, but yeah, if you could, you know, have a nap here and there, that's my best wish for you.
Thanks. That would be nice.
Thank you again to Peter for joining us on the show this week. You can head to sxsw.com for all the info on South by Southwest, when the festival kicks off, where to get tickets, get a badge. Like he mentioned, this is like six festivals that happen at once and just completely take over Austin. If you haven't been to Austin before, it's a really cool city. This is a great time to check it out, especially if you're a horror fan. We'll be back again next week with a fun episode leading up to the new season. You know, in the meantime, give us a follow on Instagram, hit up the Discord, chat with your fellow fiends about the new Mummy trailer. I'm sure you watched that this week. That's what everybody's talking about. We're also mostly just... oh, grieving the loss of, like, all of our favorite movie stars. Like, goddamn, we've lost a lot of people in the last 2 weeks. But anyway, join us over there. Share some recommendations. Let us know your thoughts on your favorite horror movies of 2026. February has been an insane month already. And if you want to hear what we thought about some of the new releases hitting theaters, join us in the Fiend Club at nofspodcast.com/Fiend Club. There's links for all this in the episode description. That's where we've been publishing episodes since we finished last season. So if you need more Nightmare or you just want some good horror movie recommendations, hit us up in the Fiend Club. We'll be back again next week with a fun bonus episode before the season fully kicks off in March. But until then, stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.